getting a divorce, even thinking about getting a divorce, can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about how to handle all those out-of-pocket expenses for your children after divorce. And this can be a minefield for divorced parents on so many levels. It leads to disputes about what expenses should be incurred, what should be shared, what's the fairest way of sharing them, getting reimbursed, and on it goes. It can also fuel competition between parents, with each parent having their preferred activity and the child ending up getting enrolled in both activities and feeling stretched for time. And it's also easy for one parent to feel that they're carrying the responsibility for all of these expenses, and they never actually get reimbursed, and so the debts accumulate, and sometimes into thousands of dollars. So question is, what can you do now to avoid arguments over these expenses? If you're already divorced, is it too late to negotiate a better agreement? What if you and your ex have different philosophies about money and it's impacting your kids? What can you do? Well, I doubt that we're going to be able to solve all of these problems today, but we're going to get some answers. And joining me today is attorney Alan Plevy from the law firm Small and Plevy in Virginia. Welcome, Alan.
Well, hi, Mandy. Thank you.
Alan, you've been practicing family law for some time. So how big an issue is this?
Well, I've been practicing family law for about 38 years now, and it has become a very big issue in the last number of decades, especially since the implementation of the child support guidelines since the mid-80s.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So that was going to be one of my first questions, is one that I get sort of common misperceptions about, is that, well, we're paying child support. Doesn't it cover all of these expenses? What is the intent? Is there a rule of thumb about what expenses child support covers and what it doesn't?
Well, yes, there is. And child support is supposed to cover the necessities. Back in the early 80s, before the implementation of child support guidelines, it was a free-for-all. It was like the Wild Wild West. Sometimes you get a judge that would include extracurricular activities. Sometimes you get a judge that doesn't. And this was not only county to county in each state, but across the country. Since the mid-80s, we have child support guidelines. But as I said, they only include the necessities, putting a roof over the child's head, giving them a bed, paying for their food, the utilities, transportation, those sorts of items. School supplies, extracurricular activities were not included in child support guidelines and still are not included in child support guidelines.
Okay. So that's a good place to start. So broadly, anything that's an extracurricular activity and also out-of-pocket medical expenses would not be covered by child support.
Well, strictly speaking, out-of-pocket medical expenses are not included in child support payments.
Right.
However, there is in most states the provision for the providing of health insurance and a specific provision providing for how any out-of-pocket expenses, co-pays or out-of-pocket expenses that are not covered by insurance, how they are to be covered by the parties, by the parents.
Okay.
And out-of-pocket expenses are usually done on a pro rata ratio of income by the parties. You've got 100% of the income of the both parties. Well, how much does mom have and how much does dad have? And then the copay and the out-of-pocket expenses paid on that ratio.
Right. Okay. But you're saying that's fairly typical for out-of-pocket medical expenses, but that doesn't.
Correct.
But you're seeing a hole that it often doesn't get discussed in terms of these extracurricular activities.
Well, the extracurricular activities I like to discuss with my clients are sports activities, whether they be involved in school activities or club soccer or club football or what have you, or tennis, whatever the activity, or even piano lessons, those types of extracurricular activities. We also have expenses for electronics, which have now inundated our lives and inundated our children's lives inside the school. The children need computers. They need Wi-Fi. They need a printer for their computer. But now they're living in two different homes. Right. And do we transmit the laptop or the computer from home to home, or where is the child going to be using that equipment? And who's going to pay for that sort of stuff?
Right.
When you get into children that are getting close to high school age and into high school, then you're looking at tutoring. You're looking at ACT and SAT prep courses.
And those learning to drive.
Pardon me?
And learning to drive.
And learning to drive. Absolutely. Those are big ticket items. We're not talking about pencils, pens, and notebooks anymore.
Right.
Those are big ticket items, and we find that the judges cannot, by using the child support guidelines, order these things.
Okay.
So what I try to encourage my clients to do is to speak about these expenses before we reach an agreement, and,
right,
and incorporate that into an agreement if at all possible.
Right.
Sometimes it's not possible.
So Alan, I've seen some arrangements where the parents have tried to identify each expense that's going to be incurred, and they make an agreement like dad will pay for the school lunches, mom pays for back to school supplies, dad buys winter coats, mom buys shoes. Personally, I don't like those arrangements because I think, you know, you just have no idea what the expenses are coming down. But I'm curious, I mean, what do you think about that type of arrangement? Could those work?
Well, sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. More often than not, it really depends on the parents and how they're working together, even though they're no longer married. I don't like those types of arrangements either. I mean, you know, clothes, you know, hopefully we're going to be able to work out that clothes come from child support. Normally, clothes are included in child support. But the uniforms or the special shoes, the shoes with the cleats,
right,
whether for a soccer player or a football player, the special sneakers for tennis, or the piano lessons, the keyboard to be able to practice with, those expenses are not going to be covered by child support. And one hopes that the parents can, before there's a divorce, can reach an agreement as to how those expenses are going to be dealt with and how they're going to be handled. If not, then they're just simply not dealt with at all. And whoever wants the child to be involved in that particular activity may have to foot the bill, or in many cases, unfortunately, the child doesn't get involved in that type of activity.
So there seems like there's two elements to that question, Alan. One is setting up a mechanism where you and your ex, your child's other parent, could discuss and agree on specific activities. And then if the activities agreed, then you come up with a way of sharing the expense.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. The first step is, what types of activities are we going to have our children involved in? Some people like to have their children involved in an activity every day of the week, aside from having to do homework and everything else that the children have to do. Some parents believe that, you know, one sport a season may be enough for a child to be involved while they're paying attention to their academics. So we have to come to an agreement as to what the activity might be, and without being too specific, so that if we say, okay, the child's going to be involved in soccer, that if the child suddenly wants to play football, then football's not included in my agreement, so I'm not going to pay for football.
Well, it depends. If you talked with an English accent, you might be able to get away with that.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. I just realized I'm talking about football two different ways.
I know. Well, I'm just teasing here. I absolutely, you know where you're going with that, but you're right. Yes.
And then the other aspect of it is, how are we going to pay for these activities that we've agreed on, or the tutoring or the prep courses that we're going to do? And generally, again, that's not going to be included in child support. But if we can get the parties to agree either to split those costs equally, or to split it much like we do the insurance out-of-pocket mm-hmm. expenses on a pro rata basis of their income.
Right.
That seems to be work. That seems to work. That seems to be fair, because you're doing on the basis of your income. However, sometimes, you know, it's going to be equal or nothing, and you choose equal because at least I'm getting something.
Right, right. And I've also seen agreements where parents agree to exchange financial information each year, and they may have to anyway for child support. But it means then that that percentage split on relative proportion of incomes could change from year to year, to reflect changes in each person's then earning rate.
You're right, but my experience, quite frankly, is once parties have been through this,
they don't want to negotiate.
They're not looking forward to going back to court another time to deal with a change of child support or spousal support. Sometimes those especially child support, remains the same through a child's entire school life.
Okay, all right. So next question is, in your experience, is it better for parents to settle up each expense as it's incurred, or do a reconciliation at the end of each month? I have to say, when I tell people, when they're just, you know, I'm mediating or coaching people, that they're going to have to keep a running tally of expenses, I get them, like, they're just absolutely horrified at the sound of that. And like, God, that sounds like so much work.
They're starstruck by it, no doubt about it. What I tell my clients to do is get an envelope, take all the receipts or all the application that reflects a fee, and put them into an envelope. And you, with the other party, can either agree to exchange those items for reimbursement once a month, or once every quarter, or yearly. I think yearly goes a little too far and becomes a little cumbersome. You know, again, in the beginning of the school year, you're going to have more expenses than you're going to have in February or March or December. So, you know, you don't want to do it too often that it becomes so burdensome that you just hate doing it. But you don't want to do it too far along that it's just going to be cumbersome because you have so many receipts.
Right. And then I also think if you leave it too long, then the amount that the other person owes might be a lot more than they can actually pay in 1 month.
Oh, well, that's absolutely true. Yes.
So it makes it, that would point to, in that situation, doing it more frequently.
Right. And you can also come, now that you're mentioning that, you can also reach an agreement or say, look, if either one of us are going to have an expense of over, let's say, $150, then we're going to exchange that on a monthly basis. But the little stuff, we'll exchange in a longer period of time.
Okay.
And quite frankly, I like to tell the people, and I don't mean to borrow from somebody else, but don't sweat the little stuff. I mean, if you hold on to a receipt for $2, is it really worth the $2 to go to battle over?
Right.
It's just not worth it.
Right. And then now you're making me think of another thing where you might actually agree that your child could participate in an activity, say soccer, and then get surprised by the actual expense of that and think, well, you know, if I'd known it was going to cost that much, I don't think I would have agreed to it.
Well, I've got 4 children, and I can tell you, soccer cleats every year, because children grow. They need a separate pair of shoes in the fall, and they need a separate pair of shoes in the spring because their feet grow. Depending on how often they might switch teams, then you need new jerseys.
Right.
And then you can go even better than that. You can get children can join a travel team mm-hmm. or a higher performance club team, and then you have more dues. Teams around where we live also pay their coaches. So that can become expensive. Also the electronics, a computer, a simple laptop for a child can run $1,000. A printer can run, I just bought one for my son, just $99. Those things add up. Where we live, most of the high schools require children to have I won't name the manufacturer, but it's a TI-38, a computer.
Right.
And,
A calculator.
A calculator. I can't tell you how many times I've replaced those calculators in since my children have been growing up and going through high school. Every year they seem that they can't find where they put the last one at in springtime. And, you know, you're shelling out another $120 to get another one. Also, recently I found out that in our local high schools, sometimes the children are said, okay, in class are told, okay, take out your smartphones. Here's the website that I want you to go to for your next assignment. And this is your classwork for today. And if you don't have a smartphone, then you can't get the homework assignment, or not even the homework assignment. You can't get the assignment for class that day. So these are all expensive items.
What I'm hearing you say there then is like sometimes these expenses are really beyond the control of either parent because they're imposed by outside organizations. But you still want to know how much you're signing up for. So before you agree to it.
Absolutely. Again, what would be the fees? Our schools have activity fees. If your son or daughter wants to participate in a club or a sport, then there's an activity fee that you have to pay. All of these things add up, and it can run into hundreds and even a couple of thousands of dollars a year, if not more.
Okay, so Alan, we're going to take a quick break here, and then I have quite a few more questions for you.
So, great.
We all know how overwhelming and ridiculously expensive divorce can be, which is why I want to share with you an easy and convenient way to sell your engagement ring. Worthy.com is an online auction platform designed to help women across the country sell unwanted valuables like engagement rings in a safe and transparent way. Worthy.com provides complimentary shipping, insurance, and grading as part of their auction process. And the best part? Worthy allows you to set the minimum price for your item. If the highest bid comes in under that minimum and you decide not to sell your ring, they'll send it back to you, fully insured and at no loss to you. Worthy doesn't make any money on the sale unless you do. And in an industry with so much markup and barely any regulation, it's great to have a company like Worthy protecting your interests and guiding you through the process of selling old jewelry. Are you ready to turn your ring into a new adventure? Join the many women who are moving forward and renewing themselves. You can go back to school, pay off your debts, and even go on a fun getaway with the money you get from selling your ring on Worthy.com. Get the fresh start you deserve.
Listeners, thank you for joining us today. And today we're talking about how to handle out-of-pocket expenses for your children post-divorce. My guest for this conversation is Alan Plevy. Alan is with the law firm of Small & Plevy in Virginia. And Alan, you wanted to share with our listeners your website and some resources that are available there.
Yes. Thank you, Mandy. Our website is called smolenplevy.com. That's all one word, smolenplevy.com. And on that website, you'll find a number of videos and appearances that I have made and my partners have made dealing with parenting issues, custody and what to expect in court, how to deal with a deposition, what to do with discovery. Support issues as well. And if you're interested in any one of those issues, I would suggest that you go ahead and take a look at the website. We have a lot of information there that can be a wonderful resource for you.
Great. Well, thank you, Alan. I'm going to check that out myself. So can we get legal for a moment here?
Okay.
Right. So I'm curious about the situation where one parent signs the child up for an activity, or this could also apply to medical expenses. Say your child has an injury in gymnastics and you take them to the emergency room. And now you're committed to an expense for your child that could be a very significant expense. Who is legally responsible? If you have a parenting plan that says medical expenses will be split 50-50, or you have an agreement that says extracurricular activities will be split 40-60, who's legally responsible for those expenses? Can the provider bill one parent, or should they be billing two parents?
Now, my experience is providers just want to get paid. It's like the credit card company.
Yes.
The credit card companies just want to get paid by the subscriber. They don't care how many credit cards are being used. So it's the person who's signing the child up for the activities is the one that's going to get the bill. You have to seek the reimbursement from the other party. And sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes you have to bring them to court to enforce that agreement. That agreement is usually incorporated into a final decree of divorce or a subsequent order, and it becomes part of a court order. So you can actually ask to have the person found in contempt of court for not following the court's order, which incorporated your agreement that says he or she is supposed to pay 60% or 40%. You mentioned an emergency visit.
Yeah.
They're going to bill the person who basically has the insurance. That's my information.
Even for the out of pocket.
Even for the out of pocket, yes. But the person who took the child just knows that bill's coming. We just don't know what it is. And we don't know what the out-of-pocket is until there's the insurance reimbursement that's made to the subscriber. So it may be a month, 2 months, three months before you get the explanation of benefits that shows, okay, this is what was charged, this is what we threw out, this is what we're going to pay, and this is what you may be liable for. And I make it clear to my clients that, we in our agreements, we make sure that we have the explanation of benefits or what's going to get paid by the insurance company before we make any reimbursements.
Right. But you're saying the expense incurred, even if you and your other party have an agreement on the division of it, the provider is going to come after one or both of you anyway, and they just want to get paid. They're not going to bill you 40% and your other party 60%.
Exactly. They want to get paid. They don't want to get into your laundry, so to speak. And they don't have an agreement with you, with both of you. They have the agreement with the person who signed the people up.
Nitpicky here, but what if I went to the when I went to sign them up and actually wrote on their bill my other parent 50% and me 50%, if I actually wrote the instructions on there?
Well, I've seen schools and I've seen other activities say, no, we're not going to do that.
Right.
You're the person signing the person, your child up. We're going to do it. In fact, I've got a client now who got a letter from the school and says, we just got this letter from your ex-wife that says we're supposed to bill you for 80% of the school fees.
Right.
Maybe they'll do it, maybe they don't. My experience is that they just want to get paid. They're not going to get into who said, she said, or who's paying and not paying.
So just as an observation, in a society where, divorce it is very commonplace, I'm surprised that we haven't gotten to the point of people having systems in place to better handle this. But anyway, another question then, let's say I paid that emergency room bill or I paid that travel soccer bill and I need to get reimbursed from my other parent and I'm paying that other parent child support or maintenance, spousal support. Can I withhold what they owe me for the emergency room from child support and spousal support payments?
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Do not deduct it. Think of your child support and spousal support as written in granite.
Right.
And you want to make sure, because if there is a court hearing later on, you're going to want to show those monthly payments being made. And if there's a deduction, then you got to get into a lot of other stuff. Why did you deduct it and so forth? Besides, there's a court order that says you have to pay it, or there's an agreement that says you're going to do it. There could be an exchange of three checks, one for child support, one for spousal support, and the other one, another one going a different way for reimbursement of soccer expenses or tutoring expenses, whatever it may be.
Hmm.
I absolutely tell my clients, do not mess with spousal support or child support payments. Make the payment. And I will also tell you, a little off subject, if you and that your ex-spouse comes to an agreement that says, okay, I'm going to pay less because I'm unemployed now or for some what other reason is, please go to court, get a revised court order, because your verbal communication or even sometimes your written communication are not going to be held up by the court. You're going to be stuck with the order that was originally written.
Right. So it doesn't change the existing court order. So your liability is still there.
Absolutely.
Okay. So it just seems like it's kind of unfair for the parent who actually, it's almost like you don't want to be the parent who's taking responsibility and actually paying the bills.
Well, no, you don't want to be the parent paying the bills, but at the same time, you want your child to be involved in these activities.
Yeah.
And sometimes we just have disagreements, and one parent wants the child to be involved in an activity, and one parent does not. And then the person who does says, okay, fine, I'll just pay those expenses. And all too often, nobody pays the expenses because one parent cannot afford, the person who wants to be involved with the child with the activity cannot pay for it, cannot afford it.
Right.
And in that instance, then the child unfortunately does not have not participate in those activities.
Right. So what's your best advice to people who say like they're already divorced, they're post-divorce, and their parenting plan doesn't include any language about the division of extracurricular activities? What would you suggest to them? Do they carry on just trying to negotiate things piece by piece, or is it worth trying to get an agreement in place?
I would try to get a revised agreement in place and say, okay, look, you know, our elementary school child is now in high school or now in middle school, and there's these extra expenses that we have. And this is for the betterment of the child. This is what the child needs. And therefore, I'd like you to share with these expenses. The child needs these. I'd like to share. I need you to share and participate in the not only in the activity itself, but in the paying the cost of those activities. And if you can reach an agreement, then I would reach that agreement. But I would also then follow up and have that incorporated into a court order so that it becomes just as valid as the original agreement.
Right. So definitely take that extra step and get it filed with the court. So Alan, does extracurricular activities expenses include college expenses? Does it go that far?
Well, no, it doesn't, unfortunately. The courts presume that a child is going to be over the age of 18 by the time that they enter college, and therefore the court has no jurisdiction to deal with those expenses. And I find a lot of my clients come in and believe, well, I want him or her to pay for a college expense or to share for it. And in fact, the courts cannot address it. The only way that it can be addressed is by an agreement of the parties before the divorce.
Right.
Or a post-agreement. But if there's no agreement between the parties, the court is not going to deal with college expenses.
Okay, so that could be a plus and a negative, because I hear like most financial planners will tell you that you need to – your retirement, figuring out your retirement savings comes before college savings. But I know the clients that I've worked with that have college – that kids are very close to going to college, like they're in high school, maybe getting ready to apply for college – how it's going to be paid for is a bigger issue, and they do want to come up with some sort of agreement on it.
Oh, you absolutely do. At the other side of that coin is the fact that more often than not, unless I've got wealthy parents who and a child that's close to high school, I don't want my clients to agree to what expenses they're going to incur in college for a child that's in fourth grade or third grade, because I don't know what his or her lifestyle is going to be like at that point in time.
Right.
They may be out of a job. They may become disabled. There may be any number of things, tragedies that might happen that prevent them, even though they might want to pay for college, that can't. But once you sign an agreement that says you will accept this obligation, that obligation stands.
Right. So again, you know, that's a a two-headed beast there. It's like you don't want to make the agreement, but you do want to have some clarity. So do you ever recommend to parents that they make an informal agreement with their other spouse that isn't filed with the court?
Well, the problem with informal agreements are they're not enforceable. but we can start a 529 plan, and the parties can share the expense of making the contribution to the 529 plan. I've had occasions where we set up a 529 plan, and in odd months, the mother will make the contribution, and in even months, the father makes a contribution to the plan.
So that's focusing on how to save for college without so it's making a commitment to save, but not a commitment to pay for.
Well, you save for it, and then the obligation is to use that money for college or higher education, or it goes back to the contributor. Right. Actually, it goes back to the guardian of the account, despite who might have made a contribution to that account.
Right. So, Alan, we're up on our last few minutes here. Do you have any other words of wisdom? It doesn't sound like we solved very much for our listeners today, other than pointing out all the pitfalls.
Well, I would just tell your listeners that remember that child support does not cover everything. It just simply does not. And before you get involved in reaching an agreement, consider what your expenses may be. And if you've got an elementary school child, you're not going to know what the activities are going to be 15 years down the road. But contemplate them and work out some type of formula where the two of you can share the expense one way or another in bearing these activities. Because what I've seen is all too often the children just don't participate in these activities.
Right.
Sometimes they just cannot play soccer because can't afford to. And just try to work that out. And because remember, it's all about the child. You want to reduce the tension that the child has. And at the beginning of the school year, not only does the child have anxiety, but the parents also have anxiety about these expenses that are going to come up. Also, it's going to be, back to school night and teacher orientation and those sorts of things where you're going to see your former spouse or your soon-to-be former spouse. And what I like to remind my clients is that your child may be 6, your child may be 14, and your child might be almost 18. But the fact is you're going to see your ex for the rest of your life because your children are going to go to college. They're going to graduate from college. They're going to get married. They're going to have children. You're going to have grandchildren. There's going to be birthday parties. So, just because you're divorced doesn't mean you're divorced for the rest of your life.
Right. And that's a really good point there, Alan, about reminding our listeners to keep this child focused, because I think it can get off track, and it's almost, as I said in the very intro, is it can become a bit more of a competition between parents.
And a competition between parents is not good for the children.
Right. Well, Alan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for the pleasure of doing this with me. I appreciate it.
And Alan, would you like to just share your resource library one more time with our listeners?
Again, my website is smolenplevy, smolenplevy.com, and it's there's a number of videos there, some articles written by my partners and myself dealing with parenting issues of all kinds. And I ask that you go ahead and take a look at it, and hopefully you'll find that it's helpful for your situation.
Great. Thank you, Alan. Listeners, if you are in the process of getting divorced now, now is the time to dig into this issue and to make sure that your divorce documents, such as your parenting plan, does address the extracurricular activities and expenses and out-of-pocket medical expenses in a way that you can commit to it. And I would just really encourage you to work with your other parent to talk about this, talk about the children's activities, what they're doing right now, and really try and structure an agreement that is going to be in place that will help you minimize the conflict going forward. And if you're post-decree and this is an area of contention between you and your ex, then like Alan says, pull out your parenting plan, refresh your memory as to what it says. If that arrangement isn't working for you any longer, then start talking about it. Go to your ex and ask if they're willing to discuss an alternative, and either work directly with them or through a third party, such as a therapist or a mediator, or you, if you both have attorneys, that could work. But you don't want to stay in this situation where every expense is a debate over who's paying it. And nor do you want to be in the place where you just pay for everything because you want to avoid the conflict. This is really worth investing some time into finding a resolution that works for your child first and foremost, and then both you and your ex. Thank you for listening. Please remember to check out my blog at sincemydivorce.com. You'll find a synopsis of the show on there. And I hope you'll join us again for more conversations about divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and this is Conversations About Divorce.